Welcome to MCBI's 60 Mark, a podcast for curious thinkers.
And welcome everyone, it's Marina from MCBI. Welcome back for another session of the MCBI 60 Mark podcast series. It's here on a lovely day here in Adelaide, and I've been joined by the wonderfully distracting Kath Faulkner from Discovery Park. Although it's not your only claim to fame, we're not actually hearing about Discovery Park. We're here to learn all about you.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming down the dirty little alley that it's a bit notorious on this podcast series. People haven't been here, they must think, where am I going? No. It's lovely you've made the time to come talk to us about a topic that I think we both share a huge amount of passion for, and it's the idea of developing people as a strategic lever for an organisation, but also just a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming down. But before we get into all that worky stuff, we want to know a little bit about you and how you ended up here today.
How did I end up here? My journey into learning and development's been pretty organic. I started as a training coordinator for a small tech startup in Melbourne about 21 years ago.
It's not terrible when you stop and go, wow.
Oh, God, 21 years. And really started that because I love the idea of the event management and coordinating and organising. And so I did that for a little while, and then I moved to London, as everyone does when they're 19, and scored myself an amazing job in a startup training function in a major bank. At the time, the Financial Services Authority was coming into power and they were putting new regulations in, so all the banks had to get these training departments up and running. And so I had an amazing manager in that role who actually started to sort of open my eyes to there's so much more to what we can do. And I think, you know, if I think back 20 years ago, we were even doing mindfulness and meditation in our classes way back then. And to think how progressive she was working in a bank doing that. I really started my passion there. And that's where it became a career. And so I started finding myself in businesses or banks in particular where they didn't have a training function. So I would go in and set that up and get that organised, and then I'd move on to the next one. So have a bit of a history of kind of starting things and getting things up and running. I enjoy that. I love greenfield opportunities. I don't like housekeeping roles. I don't like to go somewhere where it's just stagnant and you just kind of come in and do the same thing day in, day out. And I think learning has a lot of opportunity for exciting projects, meeting people and spending time with great people, and travel. Like, I've travelled, you know, between Melbourne, Adelaide, Sydney, all over the country, and particularly my role in Discovery Parks from one corner to the next, and then also worked in London for 10 years doing what I love. So, yeah,
that's
pretty cool.
Great. It is. And you only have to spend like a couple of minutes to see how creativity just comes out of like every part of your pores. So
thank you.
It is. It's a great thing. So I can imagine those opportunities when you get to create something. You just be natural.
That's
like a natural connection.
The thing I love the most is creating.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone else can do the reporting on it.
Yeah. So training and learning is it's going through a bit of a renaissance at the moment.
It is, yeah.
It's lovely to see that in the past, I think training, you know, the training department was sometimes seen as a way to close a skill gap on it, but a lot of people are now seeing it as the real strategic lever that is.
Yeah.
You can change a whole organisation through its people. But what are your observations in how, you know, upskilling people influences a company culture?
Yeah, so look, I think in my time with Discovery, I've been with them for 7 years, so I've seen the business grow enormously in that time. And when I joined, I mean, here's a surprise, I was the first training person they ever had. So went in to set up the department, and, you know, we at the time, and working within the culture that we had, it was really about identifying how we could fill those skill gaps. So we didn't really look at it as a cultural lever at the time, because it was just, we had all these regional locations and we needed to get everyone consistent. But over time and being able to set things up for the business, we've been able to now bring them back around to the culture that we want to drive is actually influenced by how engaged our people are. And our people are more and more engaged when they are confident in what they're doing and they know what's expected of them. And training plays a big role in that. But I think the other thing that I see in sort of the learning space is, and we've really had, I've had to fight hard to break away from this with some of our learners at Discovery, is training isn't in a classroom. Training isn't formal always. And, you know, we've really pushed the 70-20-10 principle in Discovery because we know that we can drive really great behaviour on the ground and the culture that we want through training at the coalface, like on-job assignments, sharing experiences, moving between parks, all those sorts of things. And capturing that under the banner of training has been probably the most exciting development in sort of our strategic planning for training. I think, it's really fresh. I think Discovery are pretty forward thinking in that that respect.
And people like you get to do some pretty cool things over there, which
we
is
do.
Great.
Yeah, we do.
The what about the other side of it? If you don't invest in people, like just you know,
We saw that. You know, we had a training was very hot for a little while, and then it sort of went on the back burner for a bit, and we saw turnover. We see people leave, people, and we look at our exit interview surveys and we ask people why they don't want to stay with us, and they didn't get the training they wanted. They didn't feel, again, I keep coming back to, they didn't feel confident in their role, didn't know what was expected of them. So without that support, they didn't want to stay. They wanted to be somewhere where they could get that training.
Yeah.
So that's probably the key theme that comes out of our exit interviews is I didn't feel like I was being trained enough. So it's been great because it's really put us, you know, got us a seat at the table at a strategic and at a board level.
Mm.
And it's an absolutely one of the pillars for us going forward.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge area. I think you've rightly identified it's the feeling of confidence that actually is the biggest deliverable, I think, of training is people go, oh, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I can make it my own, which is pretty exciting if you can make a whole organisation feel confident.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. But I'm interested. You, last time we were chatting, you just made a comment about you came from a background which I'll just call like homogenous training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they're all the same type of people.
Yeah.
And we're quite kind to accountants here, so we don't pick on them too much. But they all had, you know, you sort of described it had similar pathways, so it wasn't too hard. But, gee, you've certainly gone into a different environment now, multi-generational, regional, spread over.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the dynamic changes of training in that top environment?
It is really challenging because there is no single point of entry into caravan park management. So you might be a career caravan park manager, but then a lot of people have had their career become empty nesters and then go, now's the time for me to change career. I think this is where I want to go. I'm going to use my business acumen. I'm going to run a park. So they could be bakers. They could be from the military. They could be ex-policemen. You name it, we've got them all. And the age range we have as well in our population, you know, from our 30-year-old sort of park managers right through to late 60s and everything in between. So it is really quite challenging in terms of also our geography as well. So we've got we're everywhere. We're 60-plus locations around the country and regional. So we're not in cities. So we don't have the ability to bring people together and do traditional training. So we have to be really creative and inventive with what we do. And I've forgotten the question.
No, just how the – I mean, it's so hard because you've got multi-generational. I mean, people in their late 60s, they would have grown up with Happy Days and the Fonz versus –
Didn't we all?
I think I saw it for the first time. We saw the repeats.
Oh, that's it.
But, I mean, these, you know, 30-year-olds, like, it's such a big span of people you need to meet the needs of now.
Yeah.
That's hard.
It is. Yeah. And we have to rely pretty heavily on a tech platform to do it as well. So we need to sort of bring people along that journey, drag some of them along as well, but we have to use that sort of, have to leverage tech. But what we've done is we've realised, or we know, that there's no single approach to take because we've got such a broad range of skills, experience, age, gender, like, you know, we've got it all. So we have a multi-prong approach to everything we do. So we will, you know, set things up in a rhythm. So for those people that need to know exactly what's coming next, everything's available and you know when things are coming. Mm. We use our online learning system to measure things, that things are being done, and we do short modules. We use a lot of video. Mm. Video seems to really appeal to all levels of language and literacy, but also all demographics. People are happy to sit and watch 2 to 3 minutes of someone telling them why something's important for them to know, and then to learn about the nuts and bolts of it, as opposed to historically in our business, we would send out an email and say, here's all the things you need to know.
Yeah.
Go and do it. Yeah. So we're getting really sophisticated in our use of video, and I think that covers that huge, huge spectrum of people that we have. And then we also make sure that we still have a real human touch as well. So we make sure that training is part of, for our park managers, every week they have a one-on-one call with their regional manager, and at least 15 minutes of that call is carved out for training. So they have to, they have a set topic across the whole portfolio, and they have training every week.
That's an just amazing coaching. Investment.
It's huge, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then those training topics are followed up with an online module for those who need reinforcement, yeah. And then it's followed up again at the following week's one-on-one to make sure that they've understood. So, and then they'll leverage technology again to share screens and say, you know what, show me how you might optimise your booking chart, or show me, and then they'll coach them through how to do it. So that's huge investment, a real shift as well, particularly in our industry.
What a great return, though. Mm. You know, people knowing how to do things, all that rework gets reduced. And
we're already seeing in the first so this is reasonably fresh process for us, but we have a business intelligence tool that we use, and it has all the data. It's got all your forward revenue and your booking analysis, and it's a lot of numbers. And I think it typically would scare most park managers away. It's too convoluted and too numbery. And so we've designed some training. We've had them go through their one-on-ones with their regional managers about it. And we've seen just the open rate of that system go from a couple hundred opens in April to over 780 in May.
Yeah.
So we're already seeing that it's making an impact, that they're feeling more confident. They're actually going in and looking for information.
Looking, confident, and hungry for it.
Yeah. And it's okay to not know what to do with it. And we've really set that tone as well, that you can go in and just get in there, and at least if it doesn't make sense, ask the question, and that's okay as well.
That's an amazing thing. That creating an atmosphere of learning, I think, is such a huge, you know, huge achievement.
Yeah.
Because there is a certain amount of vulnerability in learning that a lot of people don't comprehend. That to be put your hand up and say, I actually don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
But we all need to, you know, be lifelong learners. But if you can create an atmosphere within your culture, that's amazing.
It's pretty cool.
It's magical.
Yeah.
All right, so FutureWorks 2019, FutureWorks is going to be really different from the past. There's going to be a lot of strain, I think, on trying to make sure people are skilled up, and departments like yourselves are going to be under the pump a bit more than probably they ever have.
I think so.
You know, the human capital aspect, you'll be expected to look after assets just like the maintenance guys.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen to departments like yours in the future?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're going to see people become more generalist in their skills and less specialised. So I think it's going to make training have to sort of be able to straddle a number of different topics for each individual. So I think we're starting to see it already where, you know, a park manager needs to be an expert in marketing, in sales, in people management, in asset management, etc. And that'll continue. We're not going to see sort of teams expand. We're going to see teams reduce. I think things will become leaner. So people are going to need to know more. So I think from a training perspective, it's got to be about having access. So I think, you know, that just-in-time access. So it's got to be really easy. It's got to be really modularised. And it's got to show me how to do something, not make me read how to do something as well. So I'm going to want to see what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And we're starting to build our library out in that way, so I can see, I can feel, I can touch it. I can then go away and repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing, I think we'll see a lot more, we'll see a lot more video, certainly from our perspective. Mm. We'll continue to see bite-sized learning, and I think that kind of had its day, and it's coming back now because it's so true. No one wants to sit in front of something for more than 6 minutes. You'll lose their attention, they'll move into something else, they'll multitask, whatever happens. So we've got to keep it really short and real. Mm. And it just has to be a really broad library that people can dip into, because people are going to have to stretch themselves to do all sorts of different things in these lean teams, which is where I think we're heading.
Like augmented reality will play a part?
I would love to see that.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, it'd be super cool. So I think would love to play with some VR stuff as well around for your induction, say as a park manager, that we could be walking you through your park from the central Adelaide office, and we could talk you through the things that are important for you to know without you actually having to necessarily be there and be able to conduct sort of a centralised induction that way. Would be amazing.
That would be really cool. Yeah.
And same with our sales training. How cool would that be if we could sort of VR it and you could sit there and virtually have the sales conversation with someone?
That'd be so interesting. That's where the world is going.
Yeah.
I think the next era of training is going to be a very interesting one to watch. I think the old days are, you know, the training department with the guy with the pen, you know, pocket protector, they're gone.
And the bowls of Mentos on the table, they're disappearing. The need to be in a classroom is going to disappear. And we've seen that with a recent leadership program we've run remotely with our park managers, where we were able to use Zoom with breakout rooms and have a really rich experience for our learners. And we didn't need to fly them anywhere. And, you know, we had learners in Rockhampton, in Emerald, in Ballina, you know, Darwin, all over the place, and we didn't need to put them on a plane. It was pretty cool.
It's so exciting, isn't it? Well, thank you. Our time together is done. Isn't that it's so quick? I could sit here and talk to you all afternoon.
Thanks.
That's something that it's amazing. But you're not quite off the hook yet.
Okay.
Got a few quick questions for you. Quick
sure. One.
Favourite colour lipstick?
Ah, this one.
This one.
That's really good for
radio,
isn't it? Yeah. Do you know what? It's, let's call it mauve. Let's call it a matte mauve.
It's a beautiful matte mauve.
There you go.
Now, not to say, I do admire your makeup a lot. And I see it looking good. Looks, yes, okay. Favourite lipstick, matte mauve. What's your favourite day of the week?
I reckon that would be a Thursday. I don't work Thursdays.
Thursday's a good day.
I've been part-time for 9 years now and I've not worked a Thursday, or try not to work Thursdays.
Yeah.
So it's a great day because you get bulk of the week done.
Yep.
Get myself organised for the weekend. Fridays are always a great day at work, so everyone is in a great mood.
Yeah.
And then it's the weekend. Perfect.
See, I'm doing it all wrong. All right, and the very last one. If you were an animal, what would you be?
Oh, good question. I think I would like to be a dolphin.
A dolphin.
Yeah, I think dolphins are pretty cool.
They are pretty cool, right? They're super smart.
Yes, yeah, super smart. And they're out in the ocean all the time. Endless horizons. It's just beautiful.
I love that. Yeah. And on that note, thank you so much, Kath, for coming down to the Basement Enterprises down on Featherstone Place and being a part of the podcast series. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening in today. We look forward to you joining us next time.